This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Radio, and today I'm joined by JT and Elizabeth Craft. Hello, guys. How are you?
Hello. We're doing well.
Nice to see you again. And not only are you with your hearing specialist with EBA Hearing, but you're also musicians. So this kind of brings us to a nice conversation we're going to have. And I'm also joined by Erin Palmer, who some of you will know from Sheridan Media and also as a collaborator with 307 Net Radio. But you have a sly on the side, sneaky habit, don't you, Erin? And that's that you play drums.
Yes. And I make an attempt at singing when I need to. So yes, I've been a musician my whole life.
So we're going to talk today about live sound and the impact on hearing, and particularly from a musician's point of view. And that just seems a very relevant thing to do. We have a lot of live music in our community. There are a lot of musicians. Some may play and perform. Others may be just more in their sanctity of their own bedrooms and so on. But what should musicians really be thinking about in terms of their hearing when they are playing, practicing, and indeed performing?
That is absolutely relevant. I mean, what you said, this is a big deal. Stage volume is a very significant challenge. So most people, when they're playing live music, they're playing through a sound system, and that means that they need some sort of monitoring. So they're going to play through what they call a wedge monitor, usually. And that's just a speaker that's your own personal speaker that's pointed right at you from, 3 to 6 feet away. And in order to sing and play well, a person needs to hear well, and it's hard to do over the volume of the stage, especially when there's a drummer. No offense, Erin.
Drums are a loud instrument.
That's right. That's right. And the drums really add so much to the whole thing. I mean, they're very important, but they also increase the stage volume tremendously. So now you're just fighting fighting volume with more volume, if that makes sense.
And of course, to state the obvious, but a lot of the experience of being part of a live music event is that it is loud and
yes.
It is stimulating and it is kind of enveloping.
Yes.
Is it different when you're behind the mic? Does it sound different on stage than it does when it projects out to the crowd?
It does. Doesn't it, Erin?
It does. You try to get it as close to out front on the monitors on stage as you can, but it never is. It's never exact. And part of that reason is because you may have, like on stage, you may only have the vocals in the monitor, mm-hmm. as opposed to out front, you may have drums, guitar, blah, 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 so that you have more control over the sound out front. But depending on what you have for equipment, you can have all of that stuff in monitors. But then again, depending on your gear, the drummer may want their own monitor mix where the guitar player would want something different.
Yeah.
Again, it depends on the gear that you have, who's running it, and there are a thousand different variables.
Yeah, and the personal preference of just when you're like a vocalist, for example, and you might be the rhythm guitarist for the group, the rhythm guitar in the front of the house might not be heavily mixed in, which is normal procedure, but that person needs to know what their guitar sounds like. So it would be mixed much heavier in their auxiliary channel, their monitor mix, right? And then their vocal, the same thing. Even though out front you might be blending the vocals much differently, for that individual, they're going to have their voice turned up more so that they can pick their voice out and make sure they're singing in tune and all that. And just like live sound, just like front of the house mixing, sound guy mixing your show from out front, so often the response to not hearing well, if it sounds muddy or garbled or whatever, is volume. Yeah, let's turn it up. And it's usually not the answer, but that's the response almost every time. So, if I can't hear, turn it up. And what happens is, it makes a room worse. You hear less.
Yeah.
But also, like from a mountain, if we get back to kind of the, that on-stage subjective experience of trying to hear and loud levels and everything, the same thing happens. Somebody can't hear. They're like, turn up my vocal in my monitor. Turn up my guitar in my monitor. Pretty soon, everything's really loud in that monitor. So to kind of, circle back to just safety, because the obvious thing here is when everybody needs to protect their hearing, no doubt about it. I mean, you got to be really proactive. That's something that we're lacking in education. We just need to be more aware of the fact that we're doing so much damage to ourselves. But musicians especially, I mean, you can't do what you do when you can't hear. So we should be especially careful, I think, to protect what we've got. But
we're all, when we start at 12, 13, 14 years old, in our minds, we're 10 foot tall and bulletproof.
Yep.
So we don't even think about it until all of a sudden we're in our mid-20s and have tinnitus.
And you can't be a rock star if you're not playing loud and you got your amp turned up to 11, right?
Well, I have a completely different school of thought as far as rock stars go. So I'm not a professional sound person or anything. I grew up with my dad, who had hearing aids the entire time I've known him, and it was always every volume level of everything was super low, or he couldn't make heads or tails of anything. So this is a direct link, like volume often means distortion. So it's this interesting misconception throughout this whole music community, maybe not now, maybe, you know, with the better sound equipment and stuff, it's changing. But, you know, when we were younger, louder was better. But it definitely is not the case. So you can get some incredible clarity, which in my opinion makes you more of a rock star, because we can hear you shred, or we can hear you with those runs in your vocals. When you're cranking the volume up, all of that is lost in mud, you know, and so we have some really awesome sound people in this area that have really dialed that in, and the overall gain is lower, which makes the performance not only more enjoyable, like you're hearing all the characteristics of all the instruments and all the singers, but also it makes it more enjoyable from like a physical perspective from the audience, and you don't even realize why. But when you leave a concert and you're not feeling like you have a noise hangover, you know, it's actually super fun. I think it ramps up the enjoyment factor.
But I agree. And the nice thing about, like what JT was saying about the mix and how everything goes, is that the nice thing is eventually most musicians, once they gain that experience, then they don't need to have their vocal or their instrument so high up in the mix. Most musicians, after they gain so many years of experience, can pick their own voice out of the mix. So you mm-hmm. can give them a generic mix, mm-hmm. and they can still tell mm-hmm. whether or not they're on key. Because mm-hmm. if they don't hear themselves, they're on key. Yeah. And they understand that. The problem is, usually by that point, the damage has already been done.
So let's talk about the damage. I mean, what should musicians really be thinking about?
So Elizabeth mentioned something very important, and I think we've touched on this before in a previous interview, but it's called a noise hangover. It's the true way of it's not hard to identify, and people really just need to know what it is and what that means, what the implications of a noise hangover. So when you leave a gig and you get home and your hearing is dulled and your tinnitus or tinnitus is ramped up, it means
my head feels kind of full.
Yeah.
That's sort of slightly
That's a noise hangover. Yeah. We've all experienced it when we've gone to a live concert without earplugs. They have a tendency to run, in my opinion, way too loud, the front of house sound at concerts. Almost to a painful level, and then you leave there, and it's like, man, I feel like I can't plug, my ears are plugged, and I can't pop them. I've got this really loud ringing in my head. That's a noise hangover.
And is that damage?
That's damage right there. So what people don't realize is, because they think it gets better, right? So you wake up the next day,
and
it's all gone.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, I dodged a bullet. No, you didn't. You just did perhaps not necessarily a measurable amount of damage, but think about a live musician. How many hundreds of times in their lives have they experienced a noise hangover? And each one of those times they have done damage. And so it adds up, and pretty soon all your high frequencies are gone. So noise induced hearing loss affects high frequencies. So what that means is you lose, well, firstly, you know, you're not hearing the music at all like it's supposed to be heard.
It's clarity.
And then you lose all your clarity of not only from music, but from speech.
So is it always high frequency that goes first? Mm-hmm. Okay, so if things are sounding a little more bass, a little more...
Nope. It just muffled. Crystal. It sounds like a muffle.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So like those, you can mention those receptors in your mm-hmm. inner ear. Like keys on the piano all rolled up and the high frequencies are on the outside edge. So the sound comes in damaging levels and it kind of knocks those highs out first before it gets
And better. So mm-hmm. Damage is not reversible. Is that
no,
correct?
No.
You're right.
Yes.
But he's right.
Vehemently agreeing with you that.
Right, yeah. That's the.
I think maybe speaking from personal experience. There,
yeah. Aaron. So they call it sensory neural hearing loss. What Elizabeth was referring to those stereocilia, their little hair like receptors in the cochlea, and they're not robust. They and the high frequency ones are the most delicate, and also the sitting ducks, if you will, like she was talking about. And basically, I think of it, I have this little visual, I'm a weird visual guy, like I think of Wile E. Coyote scenes and stuff from Looney Tunes and all these kinds of things, but in this case, I think of like waves on a beach and like a kelp forest, if you will, right? As long as the waves are coming in consistently and everything, the kelp forest thrives and everything's all good, right? Goes back and forth, but what happens when... you know, a tsunami comes, right? Which would be like, you know, this barrage of sound. Yeah, right. Exactly. It just comes and it doesn't stop for a while with these much heightened waves, right? Which is the same thing as sound waves, right? The amplitude gets bigger and it just bowls over those hair cells and they get knocked down. So what happens is some of them get back up again and some of them do not. It's just some of them are damaged to the point where they don't recover, and there's your permanent hearing loss right there. So, you know, the bottom line is when you have sensory neural hearing loss, other than maybe, you know, the 48 hours after the concert or something as they're kind of trying to come back around, but when it's noise induced like that, it usually within 2 months for sure. Like if someone's been exposed to a big impulse impact noise or something like that, it can come back for about up to 2 months, and then after that, the damage is completely done. So
another visual that I use with my kids, and it's like, you know, you have a piece of wood and you're carving away at the piece of wood. Every time you experience damaging decibel levels, like a little bit is shaved off, and the first one, the first little curl that falls down, can't really tell. Right? But over time, they don't regenerate. So it's permanently like made a new mm-hmm. shape out of your hearing. And then over time, every single curl that comes off of there, it's done damage and you won't be able to tell typically for a long time.
So musicians are particularly at risk because mm-hmm. of their chosen
mm-hmm.
sure.
Pursuit. What could they be doing?
Yeah. So the main thing is, you know, you're in a bit of a challenge, in the sense that you need to be able to hear, right? You can't perform music and do it well if you can't hear. So, you know, Aaron, we were talking before the interview about, you know, back in the day, the solid earplugs, they still have them. They have other options, thankfully now, but the solid earplugs, you know, they block when they're inserted properly. I mean, they block everything way too much. And also, just a little known fact, is they're not flat. So they don't block certain frequencies the same as other frequencies. So you're not getting a true response from the music. It doesn't just turn everything down by the same amount. So wearing an earplug would be the obvious answer, but it doesn't work, especially for vocalists, because then you can't make heads or tails of what's going on, because all you can hear is your own voice. The low frequencies just really loudly in your head. So
it's all muffled.
Yeah. And so how do we, you know, solve that issue? Well, we make sure the volume levels on stage are safe, right? So it works fine for like a bluegrass band, you know, or something like that, that can largely hear acoustically, maybe just needs a little bit of monitor on stage to be able to hear the vocal and stuff. And if you use a wedge monitor and you play and after you're done, you don't experience a noise hangover, you know, it's probably just fine. But that's not usually the case. Usually the case is I'm playing a 2 to 3 hour gig. There's, you know, drums, honestly, the typically the guitar amp is the loudest thing on stage, and can be very damaging. It's usually pointed right at the back of
the room. And that's high frequency.
Yeah, it has a lot of high frequency in it, which is going to cause, you know, that damage, right? So it's not filtered out. So what we've started doing a lot of is using musicians' filters for passive protection for, like, instrumentalists. This Aaron mentioned this again before. So what it does is it turns everything down by a certain decibel level flat. So all the frequencies are reduced by the same amount. So you're getting a true-to-form, idea of what the music is, just turned down by 10, 17, 26 decibels. You can get them in different levels, but it's actually a flat response, right? So if you're a sound guy and you're trying to be careful with your hearing, right, you would maybe wear a 10 dB attenuating filter, and it just turns everything down by 10 decibels so that you're not, you know.
Do you get the same experience as a musician, do you think, with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as you can hear, that's the key.
Yeah.
And as you said, you're hearing all of the frequencies. It's just turned down. And it takes, when you first put them in, they're kind of awkward.
Yeah.
Because you realize that they're there. But after you realize that you can hear, they're fine.
So it works really well for instrumentalists. It does not work well for a vocalist because that same occlusion effect happens and it's hard to make heads or tails and really know what's coming out as a vocalist. So the for vocalists or for someone, even an instrumentalist that just wants to hear a little bit better, you can go to an in-ear monitor. Now, this is something that you have to be really educated about and understand how to use it, because it can be something that can really protect your hearing. It can also be something that makes it worse. It can even be worse than a wedge monitor because it's centimeters from your eardrum.
In your ear.
And if you have it too loud, you're gonna potentially even cause more damage.
For the same reason that, like, earbuds and, you know, all those things cause damage.
So the concept, exactly right, the concept of stage monitors in terms of hearing protection is to build a sealed mold, right, that attenuates by something like 24 decibels, okay? So you're plugging your ear all up, but then you're adding in the sound through that monitor that's built into it, right? You have your own personal little speaker, and you add in what you need. So I was explaining to a guy, he's a professional drummer for like 20 years and a multi-instrumentalist, and he had joined a band, and they were all using in-ear monitors for multiple reasons. They're easier to haul. Once they're dialed in, they sound better, and people have control.
And presumably they're custom, too.
Custom. They fit very comfortably. So anyway, we were making him a set of custom in-ears. And he said, we were talking about it. I said, what I want you to do is you have to EQ them well or else you struggle to hear.
EQ?
Equalizer. Yeah. Yeah, so you spend time, thank you, you spend time making sure that the mix that you have in your monitors is proper and that they're EQ'd properly, which means that the frequencies and everything are the way they're supposed to be. So you have to have a little bit of base knowledge, or somebody has to help you and explain it. But you get the sound dialed in there, and then you just feather in, that's the term I'm going to use, you feather in what you need. So you want to primarily plug your ears, right? And then just add just enough of the things that you need in that monitor in order to be able to perform. You can easily go too far and cause damage. It's right there, you know, next to your eardrum. So you just feather it in. And I ran into this guy after he got his in-ears, and he had been using them for a while. And he's like, man, I spent time before I went out gigging EQing my monitors, and I did exactly what you said. I feathered it in. And he's like, I can hear very well, and he plays drums in this particular band. And he's like, I can hear very well. He vocalizes as well. So, you know, it was like the best of both worlds for him, because before he was just using 20 years of experience to like just kind of figure out where he was, but he couldn't actually hear. I mean, he was wearing earplugs of some sort and he would vocalize and make it work, but he couldn't actually hear himself. He was
not blending with everybody.
Right. And he, I think he was kind of miraculously able to pull it off, but he was resting on 20 years of
experience.
Of live music exactly. experience right. instead of actually being able to hear himself. So he was very relieved. And also explained that, man, I left that gig and I didn't feel like I'd been abused or anything. My ears were like thankful for that, you know? And so that's a great option for not only just being really, you know, protecting yourself and being careful with your hearing, but also like, I really like in-ear monitors because I vocalize and then play multiple instruments, and I feel like I'm more connected with my voice than ever when I'm wearing a properly tuned in-ear monitor. So again, just have to be careful with them. But.
And I don't have nearly the experience with performance as JT does, but I can tell you in my limited experience that I sang, just sang, no instruments other than my voice. There are some people that would be, what do you mean, no instruments? But I sang in a place that had a kind of a rough acoustic environment, very echoey, and I, without anything, and I could not hear myself, I could not hear anyone else, and I was panicked the entire time. So then we got some in-ears for me and played in the same place, and it completely changed the game. And I have very little, you know, I don't have those decades of experience like you were talking about, Aaron, but it was like night and day for me. And all that, you know, the ambient noise that kind of comes in and can frustrate your hearing, just your hearing for any person in there. That was gone for me in that environment, so that was a bonus. Bonus number two is I could actually hear myself and the bandmates, so I knew what was going on, and I didn't have to constantly be like, staring at them trying to figure out what was happening. So it was awesome on all those.
Interesting. I've not used them, but if that is the case, that would solve a lot of problems for musicians everywhere. Because when she said, oh, yeah, you know, the room ambient, yeah, we've all dealt with that.
Yeah.
Every musician on the planet has dealt with that.
And
it's just...
It's kind of miserable, right?
It like, is. Like, because you, the whole night, you're like, I just want out of here. Let's
exactly.
Get it.
It's not the
because
point.
Because you can't fix it. It's
so, Aaron, I don't want to offend you by classifying what I think you play by the wrong name, but you play pretty heavy rock. And
country. I play country, but it's more the traditional country, not like acoustic.
So those are pretty
stuff.
Loud.
So, yeah, it is. It is. Very loud.
And, yeah, it's a miserable experience when you can't hear. It's night and day. I mean, the whole point of playing music is to invoke joy for you and the people that are watching. Mm-hmm. Music is joy.
It's not just a performance. It's something personal.
It should be completely synonymous. But what happens is when you can't hear, which is most of the time when you're playing live music, you're preoccupied by the fact that you can't hear it. And it can make a gig completely miserable. You're supposed to be enjoying yourself and everybody's mad and you can't perform properly. And if you are, you're just putting on a face. You're not actually enjoying yourself. But when you can hear, it's so much fun.
And when you, every time you subtract a wedge from the stage, it like the benefit.
Oh my gosh, that's so true.
Exponential, right?
Like that's the other thing is that people don't realize that is so true. That's such a good point. Because so the stage volume, again, you get this saturation. We were talking, Aaron, like you just keep turning the volume up, right? When you can't hear, what's the answer? You turn the volume up. Well, the same thing on the stage.
Guitar players are
special. Yeah, right, exactly. It's true. Electric
Such
guitar players, you got to be careful.
Yeah, all we can do is just hit a little harder.
But so you know, the volume keeps going up on stage because people can't hear, right? So that's their answer. Turn it up, turn it up, turn it up. And then it starts causing all kinds of problems. You get feedback issues on stage, terrible. You get all
so
this.
So is feedback bad for hearing? I mean, yes. There's been places with feedback.
Yes. Oh yeah.
It's not only is the feedback itself can be really damaging, but it's also just an indication that there's major problems. Like we've got way too much volume somewhere, mm-hmm. and it's usually on the stage. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is the stage monitors are pointed toward the band, right? And high frequencies are where you get your clarity from any sort of group, right? So, you know, your mains that face outward are how the people out in the audience hear both the lows and the high frequencies and get a well-rounded idea of what's going on. When the stage monitors are all facing away, what happens is the highs are lost to the audience, but the lows bounce off the stage and just saturate the room.
So have extra lows.
So it, yeah. What it does, and we have all these terms that we use, but like it creates a really muddy sound. When you add three wedge monitors to, you know, two mains and a sub or something, and a relatively clear sound that was at a very manageable volume turns into mud, and then guess what? People turn the volume up as a response to try to get rid of the mud, and it's this horrible, god-awful cycle.
So a custom in-ear devices, are they the only solution, or are there other things that musicians should be doing?
So, you know, in a studio, of course, they use mostly headphones, which are great, but who's going to perform with headphones? Sometimes you'll see drummers with headphones, but rarely do you see live musicians wearing headphones. The custom monitor is really a great, great answer. They make some standard fit products that, as long as your ear is one that can handle a standard fit and get it fit properly, you know, it comes with basically like a little earplug tip that you can squeeze and stick in your ear. And that's what most people use for stage monitors. And that can work, but it doesn't often seal up properly, and then the volume has to go way up, and it doesn't, you know. So the customs are really excellent in terms of response and being able to just add just enough and not overdo the volume.
They're the most comfortable, too, because, like, you can't wear...
I can't wear my ear canals are too small, and so I can't wear anything standard. It gives me a headache. And again, so Kate, to answer your question, I'd say that, I mean, other than a wedge monitor that's under control volume wise, you know.
And how do you know that that's under control? Only because you don't have
noise hangover. Yep. Yeah.
That's and bolting the...
Oh, yeah.
And it's that live music situation, especially an indoor event, where everything's bouncing off of everything else, it's really hard to manage. I mean, you could try to monitor the noise, but, I mean, it's a really tough thing to manage. So you kind of have to protect yourself, like, do it individually, and if you're kind of... It's really hard to get the whole thing under
Custom sounds expensive, and music, being a musician is an expensive business in itself.
They're surprisingly... not as bad as people think. You can get very expensive with custom in-ears. I mean, if you're gigging, you know, three times a week or something like that, and it's a significant part of your income throughout the year and that kind of thing, you know, you might want to get a premium grade custom in-ear. I mean, they can get upwards of $2,000. Typically what we make, though, are they just have a couple, three drivers in them. And, you know, they're not an overly expensive product. I mean, I think they're $390 a set. And so considering the custom nature of them, that's not that bad. And then
that's cutting back on a few items that you don't necessarily have to have.
Right. And you know, it's just interesting thing is it saves your back too, by the way, because you're not packing around nearly as many speakers and amplifiers.
And you also don't need any other earbud option, because I use mine for the monitors, but I also use them for anything.
Mowing the lawn, you know, anything.
Do they attach to a device?
I have a little extra piece, like a little adapter, and I plug them in.
Like into your phone.
Yeah, so it has a standard 3.5mm jack.
So, you know, a decent pair of earbuds or AirPods and so on, I mean, they're expensive now.
So the only caveat to these is they come wired. right? As opposed to the wireless. And you know, so if we talk about that, since we're talking about it, there's a couple ways in terms of stage, right? So a lot of people, when they use in-ears, want to be disconnected from a wire. Makes sense. You don't want something tethered to you. And, however, you know, being tethered has its benefits in the sense that a good wired connection is hard to beat. I mean, it's so clean and clear. And also it's inexpensive. So you can buy these little belt packs that are pretty small that plug right into an XLR cable from your monitor channel, from your board, your auxiliary channel, and they're like 40 or 50 bucks. So you can get a set of in-ears, custom in-ears, and a belt pack for a grand total of like 450 bucks, and you're hearing professional level sound quality, you know, and protecting yourself at the same time.
And even though you're wired, sorry to
interrupt. Yeah, no, go ahead.
Even though you're wired, if it's an XLR cable, you can get a 50-foot cable.
Yeah.
Right.
Or up to 100.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you need to. So it's not like it's a 5-foot cable and you're standing right next to your amplifier. You right. can
and so
do
for,
whatever size you want.
So if you're not the front man that's jumping around and running around, being wired is no, but it doesn't matter at all. I mean, you know, right, Aaron? I mean, you're sitting down as a drummer.
Drummers.
Probably wouldn't matter at all. However, for people who want to move around, they've actually recently come out with some good wireless technology that's small and affordable. Forever, getting a good wireless receiver and transmitter for in-ears or microphones or any of that kind of stuff was extremely expensive. And I'm talking like one set, $700, right? So now you can get these smaller rechargeable units that are really high quality sound, and they have 6 selectable channels and things like that. So you if your bandmate has one, you can get on different channels and you're not hearing what they're hearing. And they're not that much. I mean, what are they, a couple $100 or something like that? They're like $200 and they're super small. So like for anybody that's gigging, you know, when you can minimize the weight and the expense, but still get quality, that's where it's at, right? So what we do now,
protect yourself.
Exactly, exactly. And that, so what we do now, like in our band, is we all run in-ears because we're all over 40, except for the young bucks that are coming up, our nephews
and kids
and stuff.
They need to be protected,
right?
Because you know better.
And they run in-ears, so you know, that's kind of a band thing, is when you join the band, you have to get in-ears. It minimizes, I mean, we have these small little speaker cabinets that are very high quality sound for our mains. It's just technology. It gets better, so you can make them smaller. So we revamped our system and just kind of thinned out what we had in our trailer and stuff. And we walk in there and we're like, where'd all our stuff go? I mean, there's hardly anything, but when
glorious.
You set it up and play, it sounds like, I mean, pro grade, you know. The mixers are wireless. I was going to mention this because it's relevant to our conversation. So most bands use wireless mixers now. What that means is you have a router that's connected to your stage box or your interface where all your cables plug in and everything. And then you have an iPad and phones and things that can run the sound remotely, you know, within range of this router, right? And it just changed everything for live musicians. The tools that are integrated into these things are the equivalent of these huge, heavy rolling racks of equipment that you can completely eliminate. But also, relative to stage volume and hearing well and protecting yourself, you don't have to rely on somebody else. You can have your phone with an app right in front of you, and you are running your own monitor system right there, real time from your phone. It's just super slick.
And you can tell what your levels are.
Yeah.
So you can tell if anything's peaking.
If it's too loud or something, you just dial it back on your own monitor.
Yeah,
it's
pretty awesome.
It's slick as a whistle, and it's much cheaper. You know, those wireless mixers, they don't have a lot of hardware in them, like faders and knobs and all this stuff. And, you know, they're in small enclosures and stuff. So they're
all digital.
Yeah, they're all digital, and they're not expensive. I mean, for a really, really good 16-channel mixer, it's maybe $1,000. You can get them much less than that even. And your whole band can have their own mix, you know, their own auxiliary channel that they can control themselves. And it just really changed the whole way we've done things for the last several years. And more people are adopting it because it's just like, why else would you do anything else? Because when you feel pain, when you're, you know, in your monitor, instead of hollering at the sound guy and saying, I need this down, you know, you just reach up and dial the volume back and figure that out, right? And so it's
and also,
wonderful.
Kate mentioned, you mentioned protecting the young guys, mm-hmm. that especially the little drummer in the, mm-hmm. in the back. And we made him a pair of silicone earplugs that are that have a filter in them. And so he got them in a wild, you know, they were like purple or something, mm-hmm. with sparkles or whatever. You can just customize them. Mm-hmm. And they're tiny and they fit right in his ear and they're comfy because they're silicone. Mm-hmm. And it took him, you mentioned, taking a minute to get used to that sound, but he did. And so when he practices at home, hopefully, Henry, if you're listening, hopefully you're wearing your earplugs.
I think he does.
When you're practicing
yeah.
at home.
I mean, yeah, practicing is the other thing. I mean, you know, a lot of people like to play through, guitarists like to play through tube amps because it gives a special sound. Mm-hmm. The thing about most tube amps is unless you have some special hardware built into them to like these attenuators and stuff to change it, they have to be turned way up volume-wise in order to get the sound that a person wants. And it's deafening. I mean, you could be in a room with one of them for 10 minutes and have a full-on noise hangover, but people are like, well, how else am I going to get the sound that I want, you know? So you just have to be really purposeful about it. And every time a person goes to a concert or anything, I mean, I think everybody should have a few sets of earplugs in their bag. You know, these filtered earplugs that Aaron was talking about earlier are amazing. You can go enjoy a concert. And I mean, enjoy a concert. You can hear, it's amazing what happens. We were talking about earlier about the volume slippery slope thing where the volume keeps getting turned up when people can't hear. I call it saturation. When you're in a room, let's say you're at a bar and grill and they have live music, right? And the sound guy keeps turning the volume up. That room becomes saturated at some point. And you can't fit any more sound in that space. So if you add more, it turns into garble and distortion. It's you can't fit more quality audible sound, let's put it that way. So you're just turning it into muck at that point. It just turns to garbage. It's amazing, though, when you put in a filtered earplug, even in that environment, you're reducing the amplitude of the sound. It cleans it up. So you can be sitting in a space where you could hardly understand what the band is doing. You put a set of those filtered earplugs in, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, that's music. I can understand the lyrics. I know what's going on right now. It's really interesting. So, you know, it's a dual benefit deal. You're protecting yourself, but you're also way better, way more able to hear and understand what that band is doing because it's at a controlled level and it's not saturated.
Well, that's definitely a new notion for me. I mean, I love really large, loud, mm-hmm. engulfing
yeah.
live music. And the thought of it being in some way less loud, you know, to me, I struggle a little bit with thinking, how could I enjoy that as much as that huge engulfing wave?
I think a lot of that that we don't realize is feel.
Right.
It, yes. It's the way it feels, mm-hmm. right? So when you have a really great subwoofer, mm-hmm. you know, or a stack of 10 subwoofers at live concert mm-hmm. at Red Rocks or something, right? And that drummer hits the kick and you can feel it hit your chest. I think it's that same sensation when you're watching fireworks or something and you can just feel that.
And so does that
percussive
feel go away too?
No.
No.
Okay. See,
no.
So you still feel everything.
Yeah.
Okay. But you're protecting yourself,
right.
And it's actually considerably better. I'm telling you, it's incredible. You can actually enjoy it very comfortably, but get that immersive experience because you're feeling that kick, you're feeling the bass notes, you're feeling all that stuff that you don't want to miss out on. But
I
you're
wear mine even to the rodeo,
yeah.
right? Like when there's not. Like, it's not like a full concert of live music, but it's loud and it's awesome and it's immersive and you want to experience all of it. But makes a huge difference. For you don't have to worry about the, you know, the cannon going off or anything. It's
just
like,
and you can hear the announcer clear as a bell, even more clear with them in. It seems very counterintuitive.
Yeah, but it's.
I was mixing sound one time for a punk band. This is a really extreme example. It was actually three punk bands, and we were hired to do sound for them, and it was in an enclosed space, big kind of ballroom type of an environment. And they had these stacks of amplifiers for their guitars that were, like, off the charts. I mean, it might as well have been Jimi Hendrix or something. I mean, it was crazy. I'm like, what are you going to do with that in here? You know, this is ridiculous. And, of course, what happened was they just crank it up because that's how they roll, right? And so I don't even know why I was there, because front of house was completely taken over by that sound. And I had the guitars and the basses and everything mixed out of the speakers that we had for the vocalists and all that. And it was still way too loud, right? So it was kind of a pointless show because they wouldn't work with me as a sound guy and turn their stage volume down. However, the reason I'm sharing this story is because it just sounded like pure cacophony. You couldn't make heads or tails of anything that they were doing. It was cacophony. And I put earplugs in after I kind of tried to get... I was, of course, struggling because they wouldn't comply. And so I finally gave up. I'm like, I'm mixing with earplugs. This is way too loud. And I put a set of foam earplugs that I had, which are not ideal, but that's what I had. And all of a sudden, I could hear music. I could hear what they were doing. I was like, I actually like this band. They had a really cool sound. It was a mix of mariachi and punk, and it was super interesting. The dude was playing an accordion and punk music. It was so cool. But I didn't understand how cool they were because of that extreme volume. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I could hear it. I enjoyed it, and I didn't have to do anything because I just was like, well, it's a moot point that I'm even here. I guess the vocal, and that's it. But it was interesting. I could hear. It was enjoyable. So, I mean, but I could feel it as well, you know, and it was enjoyable. It was a good experience. So I'd encourage everybody to have something like that in their person. And it's small, you know, put them in a little case. And when you need them, wear them, you know. Hearing protection is
something. You go to any kind of concert,
yep.
You need to have something.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. excuse me. As far as the in-ear monitors go, for all of us musicians that have been doing this for 100 years, mm-hmm. and our hearing is already impaired, is it worth it to come in here and do this?
Absolutely.
To get these in-ear custom monitors?
It's even more worth it for a couple of reasons. So the first reason is there's likely some damage, right? As you said before, you have an impairment. But, you know, if we go kind of back to the hearing side of things, the reason EBA Hearing offers our first test free is so people understand. They need to know what their hearing loss, if they've got it, is like, and how to prevent it from getting worse. A misconception is that, well, I've already done the damage. It can't get any worse. Well, in most cases, it can. And the worse it gets, the way more impactful on a person's ability to communicate and quality of life and potential, you know, cognitive implications, Kate, like we were, you know, talking about before. It's even more important to do it. Now, the other side of that is when you have, let's say you have a high frequency hearing loss, Aaron, and you're like, well, maybe should I do this? You can EQ these in-ear monitors very, you know, very accurately and personally, right? So you could actually go in on yours and say, well, I'm missing some high frequencies. I need some clarity. And you could increase that high frequency. Your EQ would look different than someone else's. And you would have a more pleasant experience. Again, wanting to keep the volume under control in those in-ears, make sure you're not experiencing a noise hangover. But you would have a much better experience. So, you know, another example is I went and watched a guy, quite a talented musician, play a show. And he called me up at some point and he was like, can you help me? He's like, I need you to EQ this for me. And I looked at it and his EQ was just completely spiked in the highs. and it was very caustic and sharp to listen from the audience. But he, you know, what come to find out, this guy has severe high frequency hearing loss. So he doesn't hear the same way as everybody else. So he was trying to make a good sound for everybody else, but has no way to mix properly, right? So, but for him, he needed that. He needed that high frequency in order to get a better experience and know what the sound was like. So he, if he would have had a wireless system, we could have done it independently, an EQ for him, and then an EQ for the audience that was more flat.
You remember I was talking about the ambient room noise kind of all coming together and making this low frequency mush that makes people with maybe an undiagnosed high frequency hearing loss or noise induced hearing loss, that makes conversation in a crowded place really hard, right? Because of all those ambient sounds, it kind of cancels out what you can hear. You're missing these, and then all of a sudden it's like, I can't hear anything in here. So like with those in-ear monitors, for somebody with a known or undiagnosed hearing loss, what you're doing in there is you're kind of blocking, we mentioned mm-hmm. that, blocking that ambient noise, and so you're instantly going to feel some relief. So if you have damage true. Or whatever, it's almost more important for you to come and do that because you're going to separate yourself from a lot of that sound and then give yourself a comfortable and safe level of what you do need customized for you. So it's
It's interesting because, you know, again, I was making the reference to the bluegrass type group. You know, when you have an acoustic group, you know, often what happens is somebody will leave one monitor out because they want to pick up on some of that natural stage volume, right? As long as there's no wedges, right, you're actually able to communicate a little bit. So that's often what we do is we run with one when we're running an acoustic set. The more stage volume, however, if you got the drums or an amp or that kind of thing going, you're doing two things. You're, as Elizabeth was talking about, you're isolating. You want to plug your ears for protective purposes. So if the stage volume is high, you got to plug those ears and then feather in what you need, but it does give you a sense of relief. And as long as, you know, people learn to communicate through microphones on stage or if there's a talkback mic or something like that so that you can communicate, that's the only drawback to having both in-ears in is, you know, your bandmate says, well, let's do this one. And you're like, what? You know, so that you just have to learn how to communicate. Yeah. Talk into the mic or you need a separate band mic that it goes through the monitors and they talk into that. So, it's just something the person has to, oh, you bet. You just have to settle into it. And, so yeah, they're incredible. It really makes a big difference to have a good set of in-ear monitors. It simplifies everything. It reduces stage volume. Your sound people that mix sound for you are going to hug you afterward. They're going to seriously want to kiss you because it's like, you just eliminated so many problems for me. It's not even funny. Like, I can focus on making you sound great out front and I don't have to worry about this other stuff and stage volume being a problem and feedback and all this stuff. It just eliminates so many problems. It's fantastic. You know, I'm often the sound guy, but I'm also on the other side of it a lot. And, man, I love it when people show up with in-ears. I'm like, thank you, Lord. This is going to be way easier.
I am really gun shy since that happened years ago.
Oh, man.
With wedges.
Yeah.
And I don't even want to point those things at me mm-hmm. anymore.
Right.
Just because you never know
yep.
who's going to jump on there. The feedback will do the same thing.
Yeah,
you know this. And it doesn't take anything. Somebody could grab a microphone and get too far forward and cause feedback.
Yeah.
Any of that. And it just, it makes me completely gun-shy of wedges. So if I could get rid of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And then what you do in your in-ear, because potentially you'd have the same risk, right, is on the EQ, like the main auxiliary channel, because there's basically there's equalizers per instrument or vocal or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But in the main EQ for your auxiliary channel, so let's say your auxiliary 2, okay, you go in there and you compress the channel. So when you, if you put a lot of compression, what that means is basically you're lowering the ceiling, the maximum potential output of that channel, so that if somebody decides they're going to pull a foolish move and scream their head off in a microphone, or, you know, crank a volume or something, or do what a lot of musicians do and mess with the gain levels on stage, you know, the guitarist, when you say, okay, I want that amp at 4, and they go back and turn it to 7, it changes everything. Everybody's monitors get screwed up and everything, right? So you need to have some sort of global protection in your channel. So you want to put compression on the main part so that when it hits a certain sound pressure level, it won't go above it. Like it's a level of protection. It does have a tendency to kind of squash the sound a little bit. So you just have to feel that out and fine tune that compression. Yeah. But it's like, so what? Squash it. I just want to be safe, right? Like I can hear and I want to be safe. It maybe doesn't sound quite as robust as a front of house, but it's safer that way.
And I've dealt with that because a lot of the sound techs I've worked with wanted to compress the drums the same way. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, I understand that, mm-hmm. being a drummer, because I've had musicians in front of me, mm-hmm. and I use big beefy cymbals.
Yeah, so when
when I hit one of those, they're hearing it, mm-hmm. more than they should. Yeah. So I get that when you have a sound tech says, we're going to gate this or compress it or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And it's just a protection, not only for the musician, but also for the gear as well.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things you just learn to deal with.
Yeah. That technology is also in hearing aids, which is fun to see the similarities and the parallels between.
Yeah, it's interesting.
The sound and the.
So, I was just going to say, so that's one thing for musicians you would recommend, obviously. They seem to be affordable.
Yeah.
To most musicians.
Obviously. I would think so. You know, when you're playing regularly, $400 is $400. I mean, that's significant. But, you know, when it comes to protecting your hearing and enjoying the experience kind of simultaneously, I mean, it's really not that big of an investment when you compare, as Kate was mentioning before, you know, music as a hobby can be an expensive hobby, and so, you know, somebody's playing $1,000 guitar and a amp that's worth the same, you know, a $400 set of in-ears and a belt pack, you know, that's a couple $100 to be wireless, isn't that much of an expense relative to those other things. And if you're gigging regularly, you just take it, you know, you get paid a little bit and you pay for your bad habit, right?
Well, I was just saying that when you take into consideration what you were saying earlier, the old analog PA systems, you know, you're talking a 16, 24 channel mm-hmm. board that's a couple of grand.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking subs, mids, mm-hmm. highs, and all of the power amps to run that. Then you have to go and buy the wedges, like you were saying, mm-hmm. have power amps for all of those. So you've invested anywhere from $2,500 to $5,000 in just the PA system. Mm-hmm. So the new ones that you're talking about now, which I'm assuming that's the Bose, mm-hmm. is one.
Bose is one of them.
Right. But similar to that, none of those systems were stereo. We all know that. Well, musicians know mm-hmm. that. So there's really no reason for a left and right left and right speaker stack, mm-hmm. other than you're covering the room. But these newer systems, mm-hmm. you can have one tower that covers the entire room.
Yep.
So you've scaled all that back, and like you said, it's a minimal cost compared to what it used to be 30 years ago.
It is. All the sound equipment.
The money that you're saving there can be applied toward saving your hearing.
I mean, it's exactly right. We were just talking about compressors and gates and things. That was extra equipment before. Mm-hmm. Now it's all integrated in digital mixers. We like to run, some compression drivers and some mains. Like, so the towers will do up to, you know, a small to medium room well. Beyond that, they start to kind of, they get overrun a little bit. Some bands run two and can do a medium to large venue decently. And they're able to hear some from those towers. We prefer, using loudspeakers, and kind of still running like maybe two mains, two subs, but you know, with the in-ears and just the mixer itself, you're saving massive amounts of money with the mixer, because you're saving your back again. But yeah, I mean, you can get sound out of a set of speakers, you know, that cost $1,000 to $1,500, that would be the equivalent of having a stack of speakers back in the day that cost four times as much. And so yeah, you're saving money there. You're saving your back, and you're also, you know, then able, again, it, you know, the whole experience is supposed to be enjoyable for you and whoever's watching. And as long as we're aware of that and what the implications of loudness can be, you know, I think prioritizing that is well worth it. And again, you can go up from there, but to really get into it for, you know, $500 or $600 with a wireless system and custom in-ears is not ludicrous, and it's really enjoyable. It really changes everything for people.
And I saved a little money because I didn't buy fancy headphones separately. I just used mine.
Exactly.
I saved money there.
So she uses them on the plane all the time. Yeah.
So, thank you. We've done a massive deep dive into what it's like behind the mic and how you can stay doing what you love to do. Is there anything we haven't talked about?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a really relevant conversation. I mean, it's just so important for people to take care of their ears. I think we have a unique perspective in that, you know, we're hearing aid specialists by day and musicians by night.
And let's put it out there. You also have your storefront. Yeah, we do. Is a music store as well as...
That's right. Nice. Very good music. Yeah.
Thank you. We've worked really hard, and it's been a lifelong dream, really, to have a music store. Yes, we have the two parts. We have Ebia Hearing and Craft Bros Music right in the same space. And I was saying before, I think we might be the one of, if not the only place in the country where a person can come be... get impressions and custom in-ear monitors and order them and get them in the very same place where you'd get your wireless pack to go with it, right? Because
we're kind of unconventional, mm-hmm. by nature, and we just would like to challenge people to think about this in an unconventional way. Mm-hmm. Like, we know the way has always been loud and proud, and we love that. We love music, we love live music, but we just really would love to challenge people to try something like a filtered earplug or an in-ear monitor and just see. I don't think it's bad as people think it, and the benefits will weigh.
Well, you've certainly given us a lot of reasons to think about this, and I have to say I'm pausing myself and thinking if I could have that same experience in the next live music event that I attend and not lose the feel as we've described and still have that, you know, that's definitely something that's, you know, of great interest to me. So thank you very much, everybody, for your time. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
And I look forward to next time.
Thank you so much.